Okay. Okay, let's do this. So, Paul, how did you...
Sorry, hang on. Can you just introduce it?
Okay, sorry, I'm going to introduce you, Paul.
It's good stuff. A long cat.
We have done this before, I promise. How are you doing, guys?
Hey. Hello, everybody.
It's good to be back. It's been a long time.
It's great to be back, yeah.
What have we all been up to?
Well, just getting on with the daily grind of life, I think. Yeah. I don't know about everybody else, but I think Tom's done something a bit exciting.
Yeah, I've been to the musical, the Fools and Horses musical.
You're pulling my leg!
Brilliant. Really good. Really, really good. They're showing it in Haymarket Theatre in London. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. That was in the last few days. So good.
Cool.
It's original content, well, original songs, obviously loads of throwbacks to the show. Really good effort by the stage actors and actresses. Really recommend it.
Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to speak to you about it in a bit more detail at the end of this episode. So hang around for that, guys, if you're interested to go and see the Only Fools and Horses musical. But what episode are we talking about today, guys, and why is it so special?
The Russians are coming. Now, I think this is probably one of the least popular episodes. The general consensus of the people I've spoken to anyway. And for me, it's got quite a funny feel about it. I think it's almost got almost like a propaganda feel about it, because it's talking about, you know, obviously at the time, the Cold War, 4-minute warning. And
I think the structure is very different on this episode as well, isn't it? Due to how long the various locations when they're shooting it.
Yeah, I mean, there's only sort of 4 scenes really across the whole episode. Mm. Apart from the 2 policemen, you only see...
That scene. Yeah. People say they don't like this episode, but I'm sure if you said, "Oh, what about the scene with the policeman?"
Yeah,
they'd be like, "Oh yeah, I really like that bit."
Yeah,
but I was wondering almost if this is almost like a BBC education film to the other time get, because they talk a lot about it. I don't know what the 4-minute warning sounds like.
Well, it's a bit like the License to Drill, an official episode that was never properly released. That's for educational purposes. This is like that, isn't it? And this is series 1, episode 6. This is like the finale, if you like.
Yeah. It's going to be an emotional episode for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Then.
On paper, you look at the script, it doesn't look like a comedy. You wouldn't think, oh, that sounds like a comedy sketch, would you, when you see the topic of it? But it works.
Yeah. I'm not 100% on this one. I'm afraid to say it's probably my least favourite, I think, of the first series.
When a writer writes episodes and it gets commissioned, they don't necessarily get put out in the order they've written it. I just find this one being the last in the series, or series 1, a bit bizarre. I know you've got the Christmas special, follows this series, going to series 2, but it's a bit of a funny one to end on.
I would have ended the series on Slow Buster Chingford, I think. It's a bit more of a high for me, with a bit more comedy factor to it.
Yeah.
But, it still stands up, I think.
Guys, we've got a very special guest joining us on this episode.
Who's that?
It's the one and only Mr... Paul Burling.
Hey.
What, from Britain's Got Talent?
From Britain's Got Talent. Us guys know him for his Only Fools and Horses impressions before he was on that show, but he was such a nice guy, had some amazing stories to tell, and his impressions were so real, they sort of freaked me out.
But he's been a professional, he's been working on it for sort of 30 years and perfecting these impressions.
And it just shows in his work.
Massive repertoire as well.
Easily the best impressionist that I've ever heard. Mm. And I thought his stuff was good on television, on YouTube. Yeah. But talking to him on the phone, his impressions were so real.
Yeah. Uncanny. I thought we were actually talking to Buster Merrifield at one point.
Yeah.
It was really surreal.
And he's a very, very lovely guy. So stick around to hear our interview with him. And you can also check out his social media and Twitter. His Twitter handle is @RealPaulBurling. There's plenty of videos floating around of him on YouTube. You should definitely listen to our interview, then check out some of his stuff after.
Right, series one, episode six, the Russians are coming. So we've all like established it's maybe not our most favourite, but it's a series, don't use the word finale, it's just the last episode in the series.
It's got some great, it's got some really great lines.
It's got some great lines, mate.
Stop talking crap, Mike. Go on, Ed. Sorry, mate.
No, it's got some classic lines, isn't it? It's got some moments that everyone remembers from the S. So, yeah, it's brilliant.
And I know I keep talking about clothes, but Del Boy is wearing like something I expect Granddad to wear. It's like a golfer's jumper, isn't it? It's like green sleeves with diamond black checks and sort of brown. Big, background,
big not, 70s
it's
collar.
It's not Del Boy's usual debonair. It's look, not, is it?
No.
It's a Sunday.
But he looks like Sunday he's gal. Just been down Yorkshire, which he obviously just has been down Yorkshire, and he's bought a load of crap. But the thing that surprises me about this episode is that Del Boy said, "Look at that! I bought a pile of bricks, basically, and underneath that is 30 boxes of the lead for the shelter, but." Why has it got to be back on the site by Monday?
That's what I was going to say. Why would they leave such valuable materials?
Because they're talking about selling it for it's a grand's worth of lead there. But they guess, oh, this has got to be back on the site by Monday. Why? Is it the paddies to be on?
Well, how does he know it's a grand's worth? That's what he sell it for. He's just guessing.
Well, I think he'll have a good idea about
it's a good point,
what materials are worth.
Do we think that he knew all along that there was lead there and that's what he bought, but he led Rodney there to make it look like he was discovering it?
It's whether maybe there's an alternative theory is that when that was all dumped, he's placed all of that lead underneath the bricks.
Yeah, there's that as well. It's a Del Boy
thing to do. It's almost like snuck it in because obviously it got past everyone else.
Well, there's on a particular website where people can put observations of the show, someone's observed that when they go to the site to pick up the lead, Dale tells Rodney that he's brought the bricks from a factory that was demolished. However, the land around the rubble suggests nothing had ever been built on it, and it's all grassed. Is that a matter of opinion, or
I don't know?
It looks pretty derelict, doesn't it?
It does look derelict, but it almost appears as though he's bought this and it's just been dumped in that space rather than it was purposely there.
Yeah. We've already spoken about the clothing, but whoever's designed Rodney's never wears a poncho, does it?
Afghan scarf.
That's it. Yeah. And Dale never really wears that kind of clothing. It's like whoever the makeup artist or whatever they're called on set.
Costume designer.
That's the one. It's they're Rodney obviously a one off.
He looks so scruffy. He's wearing that. He's got baggy trousers and got his socks. He's got his trousers tucked into his socks, and he just looks an absolute mess.
It's quite an organic look for Rodney, I think, isn't it? I think it's supposed to represent something about his personality rather than what he's actually wearing, I think.
This set looks quite bare in this episode as well, like their living room. Don't you think?
You know, so we're back at the flat, and they're just putting all the boxes of lead around the living room. Dale says to Grandad, spread them out a bit. If you put more in the middle of the flat, this isn't verbatim, obviously. We'll be having tea with Mrs. Oboko from downstairs. Well, in the Only Fools and Horses musical, they actually had the character of Mrs. Oboko, which I thought was quite funny, just to add that, you know.
What an Easter egg.
Yeah.
What an Easter egg indeed. I just find that this episode, that I got a feeling there must be some sort of story behind why this episode was written in the first place. It just seems a little bit of our place.
Maybe it has some sort of connection, like what Tom said earlier on with License to Drill.
Yeah. It's almost like there's been an idea, but it's a little bit, the loose ends aren't quite tied up in terms of the purchase of the lead.
I guess around this sort of time, those sort of educational videos for health and safety and what to do in certain situations were quite popular. So maybe John Sullivan saw an opportunity with that and thought he'd write scripts.
It's quite political as well, because there's a bit at the end, which obviously we'll come to, but when Grandad's talking about homes built for heroes and, you know, it's almost
quite an emotional speech.
It's quite strange in that sense.
But it does feel more educational than entertainment.
Yes.
I just did a bit of research, right?
Okay.
And under the Did You Know section of this episode, I didn't know this, but the idea of the script was based on some people John Sullivan was reading about who did, as the script suggests, they purchased lead and end up with an air raid shelter. But, you know, just to that's quite a very random bit of information that John Sullivan's picked up and he's turned it into an episode. Only John Sullivan could do that, I suppose. This might be maybe not our most favourite episode, but I still laugh at the most of it, you know. When we come to score this out of 10, I mean, you're going to give it a 7 or 8? Like, you know, you've done.
No, I'll give it.
Quite generous for some of these.
Yeah, but I only do it based on the series, so I'd still probably give it a low score in, in terms of that, the series.
I generally do it as a whole, but maybe I should.
But for me as well, it also feels a little bit clumsy in the way where they built the shelter on the roof at the end, which I think we're going to get to that later. But it's the fact that Del Boy, Rodney, and Grandad didn't realise that they won't be safe as houses up there.
I never quite understood if they generally were being fools with that. Or they just ran out of ideas. They thought, let's just stick on the top. Because Rodney would have gone, hang on a minute. This completely defeats the object here. We're doing this scene by scene, so we're jumping ahead. But, yeah, well, I'm jumping ahead. Anyway, we're in the flat. Dale's just sort of come to the realisation Rodney actually wants to set this up. He wants to build the lead, put it together as a fallout shelter.
Rodney's gone back to his sort of political...
morals.
Yeah.
I think Dale's quite ignorant to the fact of what actually would happen to him in that worst case scenario. So I think Rodney's trying to educate him and persuades him to build the structure.
Well, this is what I mean. I think it feels almost like an educational film because I think at that time in the 80s, the threat of a nuclear attack was, you know, it was in everyone's mind. And maybe this is just, maybe it feels funny now looking back on it sort of 30 years down the line because I know there's obviously problems in the world, but we haven't got that hanging over our heads of a nuclear strike.
Yes.
You know, some may argue that we do, but, you know, that's by the by.
It must have been a scary time. So lots of rich people used to have their own shelters under their houses, didn't
they?
Yeah,
true.
And I think there were some warnings broadcast by the BBC what to do, where to go in the event of a nuclear attack, you know?
I think I've seen them, and I'm pretty sure one of them was two school children walking out of school, and they were just told to hide behind a bin.
Yeah, that'll keep you safe, won't it?
Keep you safe, yeah.
Scary.
So maybe it did have some sort of educational educational thinking behind it. But we've also got to remember at the time there's only 3 or 4 channels. So this would have been watched by millions and millions of people. Was this prime time then, the first time this was aired?
Yeah, it's only 3 or 4 channels. Plus it would have been Friday night, wouldn't it? 7, 8 o'clock.
Well, just remember, seriously.
It was only a Tuesday, wasn't it?
How was it?
Series 1 didn't fare very well on its original run. So even though it got like nearly 9 million viewers.
That's a lot of...
Brilliant today.
No, that's still still quite a big percentage of the population watching it. So
well, how many people had TVs back then?
Yeah, exactly. So it's even more. So it gives you...
In the grand scheme of things, it's probably a really high percentage of people who tuned in to watch the episode.
Absolutely. I just find it really such a strange episode. And now, like I said, there are some really good bits in it, like Grandad's speech about.
That's interesting. I was going to go back to that because Ed mentioned it previously, and I think it's a scene that a lot of people forget about. The question is it the most emotional scene in Only Fools and Horses? Because I know there are a few, but definitely. I think that's overlooked, isn't it?
Oh my, yeah, definitely. It's underrated.
It's beautifully written.
Yeah.
Well, Grandad just came up with an idea in the flat that they should build it in the New Forest. how they're going to get from Peckham to the New Forest in 3 minutes.
I hope it's not in John's back garden.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you said about the speech.
Yes.
The other speech I really, well, is quite tearful was all the way in Series 7 when Albert, the Knock Knock, Ian Heavy is my brother.
Yeah.
Sorry. Not the song. That episode where Albert, you know, is sort of reflecting on life and he's feeling a little bit down, that's a quite a nice heartfelt speech.
Mm.
Different kind of tone, I suppose. But
for me, when Cassandra had the miscarriage.
Yeah, of course it's that. Of course it's
and
that.
Del's doing that speech.
Delish, yeah.
And then you're feeling emotional. And then like when he does that laugh.
Out of nowhere.
you don't know what to do, whether to laugh or cry. Like, it's just such an amazing moment.
I thought you were going to say when, you know, he gave the speech to Rodney, you know, go in there. No, I don't see any crying.
I want you to be a rock.
And then out of nowhere. Yeah. It's brilliant.
You can just do your booing in the way home.
I know we're going a bit off subject. We're going back to what Ed was saying about the scene where Cassandra has a miscarriage. I think that must have been really difficult for the audience viewing, knowing how to handle that. Because you watch Only Fools and Horses to laugh. And I think that's really hard hitting because it's so unexpected.
You think the first time I saw that, it was felt like a bit of an emotional roller coaster watching those specials. But there we got, they're practicing their route to Grandad's allotment.
Grandad's been stuffed in the back of the car.
Yeah. I was thinking about him actually, because when he comes out of the flat, they grab him and they start running with him and he loses.
Looks like he's going to fall over.
I think he loses a slipper, doesn't
he? Yeah, he does.
He's running over. And I thought that probably was quite physically challenging for him being pulled away like that.
There's no health and safety back then, mate. You can do what you want with the actors.
I'll tell you what, though, you wouldn't get clear roads like that in London now, would you?
No.
I like this scene where he's trying to pull out the junction and a simple line of, you tit, Rodney. There's not loads of like great funny one-liners in this, but they're just delivered to perfection, aren't they, as ever?
Well, we're just leading up to the scene now where Del and Rodney and Grandad are being chased by a police car for speeding.
Wayne! Wayne!
This is a fantastic scene.
Yeah, it's great.
I like the subtle Ghoul Bennett just as the sirens are heard. Like, just that delivery from David Jason.
He's young, enthusiastic. Well, how are you then, dull boy?
Not too bad, Eric. How's yourself?
Can't complain. How are you then, Grandad?
All right, Eric boy.
Wayne.
Classic Ford Escort. By the way, I'm on car watch again this episode.
Yeah.
Nice Ford Escort in police blue pulling over Del Boy.
Del must have had such a good relationship with all the coppers, you know, apart from people like obviously Slater, but which hasn't been introduced yet, but he seems to know them all really, really well.
It's a bit inconsistent there because he really despises, you know, he falls out of Rodney for going out with one, but he knows how to play them, keep them on side, I suppose.
Well, he does, and he keeps them at arm's length though, doesn't he? So if he wants, is it Eric?
Yeah.
Eric wants some swimwear. I'm on the lookout for some swimwear. So he's always going to keep him happy. So, you know, if he's on duty in the market, he'll get maybe a tell a blind eye.
Talking of that, Del Boy, you might be able to help me. I'm on the lookout for some stolen summer wear. Short sleeve shirts and blouses, men's and women's slacks, swimming trunks, bikinis.
You after promotion, Eric?
No. Me and the wife are off to Corfu next month. You've got to look at that, ain't you?
I think the issue was with Rodney dating the police lady.
He's bringing her back to the flat.
Exactly. And that's not what Del wants.
No.
That's true. Yeah, that's what really did it for him. Jumping ahead to other episodes, aren't we?
Mm.
But no.
It's all relevant.
It is, yeah. And this, how many original vans were there? Because the number plate is not the...
I think there was three, wasn't there?
I know Ricky Hatton has one. Perry, Falls and Horses Convention owner, has one.
Yeah, he's going to...
I can't think who's got the remaining...
I don't know.
I don't think they all survived. I don't know. I mean, I know they're probably not all roadworthy and filled with rust, but...
You try and buy just a Reliant Regal Superman, and it's $3,000 or $4,000 before you've decorated it and painted it yellow with...
Well, the Robin Reliant, which a lot of people refer it to...
It's a Regal,
It's a Regal Superman.
Yeah, that's it. But a lot of people bought the Reliant and did a conversion to the van to make it look like a van. Mm. That's how popular the van was, that people would do that conversion. There's just so many replicas out there.
My brother-in-law is a massive fan of Only Fools and Horses, and about 10 years ago, he bought the Only Fools and Horses van, and he's actually converted it. So he took the engine out, and he's using it as a trailer. So you open up the bonnet, and you've got all the storage space, and he tows it along.
That's awesome.
Technically, you tow it along, but I think he's still working on it to this day. It's one of these projects that he's been working on, but it'd be fantastic when it's finished.
I did see on Twitter, sorry, Tom, I did see on Twitter that there's a funeral service that have got the only four, they got their van.
Only
which
Fools
is,
and Hearses.
Only Fools and Hearses, that's right, yeah.
Sorry, but how have you never sort of mentioned that before? I'm well intrigued by your project.
Yeah, I don't know what I've not mentioned. To be honest with you, I completely forgot about it. I don't see him very often. But yeah, we should get him on and find out how the project is going.
Yeah.
Or if you want any pictures, upload to our Twitter.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
We've established, though, Del, Rodney, Grandad, the 4-minute warning's up, and they died however many seconds, minutes ago.
Yeah.
Mission failed.
I don't know where you would go in London. I think you're pretty much screwed unless you get in the fridge.
Well, that's the beat.
I don't know the underground, though. Even that would be... That's not going to be sealed, is it? The radiation's going to get down there.
Yeah.
Well, where they could have planted the nuclear fallout shelters, where Rodney hides in the future episode, because that is still more than sheltered from...
Apart from if there is a nuclear bomb lands on London and wipes out the tower, it's just going to fall on top of them.
Let's hope the lead keeps them from harm's bay.
Go and Madame Tussauds and hope all the wax blocks it all.
Grasp of the straws there, Ed. I just find it that Bill putting that together could not have been easy. You must have needed a degree. In...
No, it's not like a tent, is it?
No, it's got, you know, air tubes and all sorts.
That would have been an episode in itself, watching them trying to put that together.
Look at it. Amdale's just saying it's got to be back in the building. It's like first thing Monday. I just don't understand why.
Where did the toilet come from?
Oh, it's obviously flat pack, isn't it?
Chemical toilet.
I thought it was just lead there that they found, not all the accessories for it.
Well, if you look there, it's got all the accessories there. Look, they've got shelving.
Something about this doesn't make sense.
Delboy can get his hands on anything.
It reminds me.
There's no way they would have bothered putting the chemical toilet in because they're staying there the weekend.
So let's assume let's not assume they built this in one day. This could have been over a few weeks and he had to get all the gear.
Well, no, because he's bought it and he's got to be back on the site first thing Monday morning.
Good point.
It reminds me of the first ever Wallace and Gromit, A Grand Day Out.
Yes.
When they build a rocket. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just, doesn't it? They've got pictures up in the background. They've got like cheese. Well, obviously not cheese. But they've got stuff on the shelves and stuff. It just reminds me of that.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
But Grandad, who can't go anywhere about his telly, complaining he hasn't got a signal.
In this scene we're watching now, Rodney's got his T-shirt on, and it's, what is it, UK Decay?
Yeah, is that a...
It sounds like the name of a punk band, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Also, you just said earlier, Bailey, about how did they get all that in there? Well, if you remember, Grandad's carrying quite a large box.
Yeah.
But then again, when we first see those pile of bricks, there's no way all of that is getting under those bricks, is there?
Absolutely not.
This is a big ol'. Money ol'.
It's a funny old episode. There's quite a questionable line in there as well, isn't there?
Before we get to that, there's one of the jokes in the shelter. It's not really a joke, but Dale's bashing their umbilical cord, as he calls it, because there's a pigeon nesting in it. Rodney gets quite funny with him, but Rodney comes back on Rodney doing it later, which I was like, yes, he's reduced to like knocking it out, because clearly...
If there's one thing you must never do with an umbilical cord, is bash it about with a hammer.
It amazes me, like, Dale's willing to go ahead with this. Like, Dale's probably got better things to do, you know, go out on the market, flog some gear. You know, that stuff's got to be back on there.
Which is why, for me, it just feels like an educational film.
Mm.
And I got a feeling it might have been...
Well, like, the Did You Know section, like I said earlier...
Is there anything else on there?
It just said Sullivan knew of someone who literally, you know, found some lead and... You know, it wasn't theirs to take, really, and it built an idea from there, really.
So what's the questionable line? Can any of you guys remember in this episode?
I can't remember. I know it's controversial. It wouldn't be aired by the BBC today.
Is it something to do with the schoolgirls and Delboy? Because that's a bit strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, in today's standards anyway. I don't know how old's Del in this episode.
Right, series one, he's 35. As he says in the first episode.
And he's talking about 16-year-old girls, isn't he?
School girls, at least. Yeah, I don't think it would pass the...
Is that the questionable line, or is there, like, a racial line?
Hey, Del. 1,000 new ball girls in a shelter in school uniform.
You sicko.
No, don't misunderstand me. I mean, the school uniforms are of no importance whatsoever. I don't know why I mentioned them.
No, it's probably because you're a twisted, perverted, corrupted, warped little pervo.
Well, yeah, that might have something to do with it.
So we're at the scene now where Rodney and Delboy sat down listening to Grandad delivering his emotional speech.
Yeah. And you got that slow zoom in on the camera. You know it's going to be... An interesting story.
Glorious, valiant war, that.
Don't talk like a Burke, Dell.
Do what?
What do you know about it anyway? The only war you ever fought is the Inch War.
Eh? No, I I've seen all the films, haven't I?
Tomato sauce and stuntmen. I'm talking about the real thing. I remember when I was a little nipper and I saw the soldiers marching off to battle. Oh, yes. It was a glorious sight, all right.
Yeah, I bet all them spears and chariots must have stirred the blood, mustn't it?
Just hear him out, will you?
Yeah, all right, all right.
My brother George was at Passchendaele. Nigh on 500,000 Allied troops died there, all for 5 miles of mud. I was at King's Cross Station when his regiment come home after the armistice. Most of them was carried off to train. I saw men with limbs missing, blind men, men who couldn't breathe properly because their lungs had been shot to bits by mustard gas. While the nation celebrated, they was hidden away in big grey buildings, far from the public gaze. I mean, courage like that could put you right off your victory dinner, couldn't it? They promised us homes fit for heroes. They give us heroes fit for homes.
Dale's brought his silk Japanese dressing gown along with him, so he's come fully equipped and prepared.
Yeah, and it says on the back, like, perfume stains. Like, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't know about that Staines was a town in Berkshire. I don't know if that's what it's related to, but I thought
what's this on the back of his dressing gown?
Yeah, yeah.
What is it?
And I thought, that's a bit bizarre. Perfume stains. Why would you have that on the back of your dressing gown?
Just remind myself that Grandad, Edward Trotter, and Albert, they had George, and they had Jack Trotter.
Yeah,
Jack's, I think, is referenced once, but George is referenced a couple of times in later episodes.
So, I always forget. Sorry, go on.
So now they've just realised that with all the supplies they've got, they're only going to be able to be kept alive for 3 years, which is a great shock to them because they were planning on spending the rest of their lives in there. So it's not going to work.
No. Just those big three leisure batteries or car batteries they got at the back. You know, how long were they going to last until they go flat?
Bit of a blunder, though. Grandad's allotment is mentioned in this episode, but I don't know if you remember in Homesick. He says that he's never had a garden, but, you know, allotment is a part of a garden, is it not?
It's mentioned in Mother Nature's Son, obviously, much further on down the line.
An allotment is often somewhere much further away from your house, I suppose. Like, it's a garden, but it's not your personal garden, so you can probably forgive it.
Allotments are often like quite a distance from your house or your flat as well, and they're all packed together with other allotments. And it's, usually you can't just look out the window and have a look at your allotment. You have to do some travelling.
It's prime real estate now, trying to get allotments.
Should we start talking about allotments now?
Yeah.
So these guys have been in there, presumably this is the first night. They're planning on spending the rest of their lives in there if the worst happens, and they're clearly bored and want to leave.
How long do you reckon they'd last in there?
Well,
I think they've already worked out how much food they'd need for, like, is it 12 years or something they said that they have to stay in there? Is it 3 years?
Three, yeah, they said three.
And they already worked out how much food they'd have to have in there. They realised they wouldn't have enough space to even live in there. Another flaw in the plan. They got to have it back on the site by Monday. I mean, it just looks like it'd be such a ball ache to take that down. It's 3 tons of lead there, and they're on top of Nelson Mandela House.
How enough do they shift it all up there? It'd be really heavy, wouldn't it?
Those lifts are broken again.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much the end of this episode.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Paul Burling. How are you doing, Paul?
Hey, Paul.
Hello there. Hi, guys.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. Well, I'm here with Tom and Ed and James.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Tom, Ed and James. Hello.
Hello, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Hello.
We're all massive fans of yours. It's really interesting, actually. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to listen to our podcast, but we used to get together as a collective and just watch Only Fools and Horses, and we've done it for years, and we just sort of sit around and watch television, eat takeaway food and drink beer. And during that time, we discovered you in this one particular video that Tom, who sat next to me, actually showed me. And it's you doing some impressions of the Only Fools and the Horses characters. I'm not sure where. It was shot with a mobile phone. It's quite a few years old, but I literally couldn't stop laughing for weeks. So
good. Well, yeah, it's very good.
I still do a similar routine because I think Fools and Horses is, in fact, I did last night, and my gig last night, is because I think it's so integral to the British public, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think even though it's not been really aired since, 96 was the free special with the Time on My Hands and all that, what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they did the next one, which I felt they should have done, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
But, and so it's been a long while since it's been on, but it's just all the time on, UK Gold, and do you know what I mean? So I think, it's just, people still love it. And luckily with me, with being a fan as well, and doing my act. They still enjoy the routine, and it's quite visual as well. It's the only time I really use props, really.
Right, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only time I really, apart from putting glasses on for doing Harry.
Yeah. It's the instant transformation for anybody, isn't it? I think with the black glasses.
Yeah, bald bloke with glasses on. Oh, it's real.
if you've got hair, you're Michael Caine.
So with the Uncle Albert, because the Uncle Albert's quite a visual thing as well.
Oh, brilliant,
When I wear the waistcoat on stage and stuff like that, and, that sort of thing. But we'll get to that in a bit, no doubt.
Do you have a favourite impression? And what's your most requested impersonation to do?
Well, it varies, to be honest with you. Because Fools and Horses is the one that gets commented a lot more because, again, it's very visual.
Yes.
And I don't really use a lot of props, but I do use most props for Fools and Horses because I feel you have to have the black cap.
Oh, yeah.
And you feel you do have to have the beard. I used to do Boise as well. I used to do that. Hello, Bill Boy. And I used to have a moustache, but again, kept falling off. So
I think that adds to the comedy value, though, because I think
Oh, yes, I am balanced and it's all my top lip. Shut up, Molly. And it's all that sort of stuff. Fools and Horses always gets a big response, and people always say to me afterwards, they come to me and say, oh, I love you, Fools and Horses, mate. Do you know what I mean? Which is lovely. But then what I like is then the next person say, oh, I loved it when you did Simpsons or Family Guy when you did Michael McIntyre it's quite nice because you've got different, when you're working to family audiences, you have different age groups, of course.
Yes.
And surprisingly, maybe not so much in recent years, but maybe five years ago or something like that, even small kids would come and say, oh, why don't you do Frank Spencer? Do you know what I mean?
So that's amazing.
Even small kids go, well, why don't you do Frank Spencer? Because I think he's a little bit too, Yeah, people seem to like, hopefully most of the impressions do. But for me personally, I go through different phases. Because I'm a big Family Guy fan. I do a routine of Family Guy where, speaking of dead, you always... No freaking way.
That's so good. You are so incredibly talented. It's insane. It's mad.
I just find it as I get paid really to have fun and show off. Really, I mean, that's what most entertainers do, isn't it? Really, I think we get paid to show off, but I genuinely love what I do. I genuinely love it.
Yeah, I think it shows. I think it shows in your work.
You got any upcoming? Have you got any upcoming gigs in the, particularly the West Country?
I'd say so. I'm not finished pantomime whilst down in Swansea. I don't know, Swansea doing Pantomime with Heath Trump Steps. Oh. And it was great fun, and we all had a great fun down there. I've got gigs coming up. I'm doing sort of some of the Haven Circuit down the southwest. Some of the gigs around down this way. I'm doing some gigs with Andy Ford.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Do you know Andy Ford? He's so lovely, my lover. we're doing some gigs around Bristol, and we're doing Plymouth as well, because he's through Bristol, but he does for Panto and a fan of some fan. But he's there, so he's there, does Plymouth, and we're going to do some shows down there. I think we are. So he's a good mate of mine, and he's very lovely. So I'm working with him. He's always great fun because he's such a lovely guy, and I'm so talented as well. Do you know what I mean? What he does, and so off the wall, which I like.
Excellent.
Do you know what I mean? So it'd be fun sort of doing that thing. And so he knows he knows the impression of him, does he? He does know. So we're doing some gigs and that, so people go on my Facebook and all that and look at them.
And you've got a website as well, haven't you, Paul?
Yes, paulberling.com.
Paulberling.com. Okay, so all of our listeners out there, if you haven't heard of Paul, which I'm sure you have, all four of us here highly recommend going to check out your performances because you are extremely talented and very, very funny.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, so I just, just misspent childhood really, and I just enjoy it, and, you know, hopefully people feel enjoy it with me, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like I said, because I never had it as a career, you know, when I sit at school, like, you know, what do you want to do when you're in school? I want to live off the state. I didn't know what to do, and I've been very, 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 very lucky in the fact that I found something that I've always had an inkling. I never had an inkling for, do you know what I mean? I always knew I could do the voices.
Yeah.
But I never had that sort of the push behind me to do it as a career at that time.
So yes.
It sort of fell into place, and, you know, through good times and bad times, it sort of fell into place. And then, obviously, BGT, like you said earlier, I mean, that was nearly 9 years ago, but what is nice is people like yourselves, and when I say to people, it was 9 years ago, they go, no, it was only a couple of years ago, wasn't it? So that's always a good sign, because that means you still remembered.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I mean, cause it was 9 years ago.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, of course.
So that's a long, you know, that's nearly a decade, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah. What do that for?
Paul.
But it's the same brush. Look, Del.
Oh, what a good trigger.
Paul, I've always been really envious of people who are very good at impressions, pick characteristics up from people really, really quickly. And between us five here, we have a WhatsApp group and we're constantly sending voice recordings to each other day in, day out. Pretty terrible impressions from mainly Only Fools and Horses. We do Peep Show, Home Alone, just random stuff when you least expect. And we wondered if you could, especially me, I'm going to put my hand up now and say I'm probably the worst person at doing the impressions here.
Is he?
I am. Yes, I am terrible.
I'm asking the others.
Yeah.
He's bloody awful.
You're pulling my leg.
But I was wondering, what advice can you give me or our listeners out there who are interested in starting comedy or wanting help with their impressions? What sort of advice could you give?
Like I said, I started in the late 80s. That's a long time ago.
You've got lots of experience behind you.
Yeah, but I sort of fell into it, like I said before, and working on Hottie Parks, which I loved. I mean, it's great when you're young and teenager and wine women and song, but it's also the best apprenticeship you could ever imagine in the business. But I think nowadays it's probably not so much so now. When I go, still go around the parks, and I'm still proud to go around the whole few parks because they, you know, that's how it started, and I'm very proud of that. But I think it's changed now, and I think people now tend to be going to open mics at comedy clubs, on YouTube. I mean, blimey, you know, if you told me 1988, people just put stuff up onto the screen on this thing called YouTube and become celebrities and a lot of money for putting really funny clips or whatever on that sort of stuff, then it'd be mind-blowing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
The exposure you get now.
And I think that's probably the option now. I think people, you know, a lot of people have been discovered in more recent years with just putting stuff up on YouTube.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think people, from an impressionist point of view, I think it's all about practice. And I think, again, I might sound old school, but it's practice and practice and practice and enjoying it and being honest with yourself. I mean, I have a wife who's worse than Simon Cowell.
So she's quite critical then. Is she your manager?
She's got high trousers on and she really sits there going, this is awful, darling. I hate it. You know.
So, Paul, what's your favourite Fools and Horses episode and favourite character?
Or moment.
favourite character? It's hard because also such strong characters in so many different ways.
It's a difficult question.
It is a very difficult one, thank you. obviously Doughboy is, because the thing about Doughboy, like, because he's real crusty, you know, he's all like, oh, more than me, oh, could you be on? And he's a white boy, you know, he's a little bit of heck. He doesn't have to choose it. I had to choose it, and that's the way he is. You know what I mean? Other times he's quite soft, like with Kill, and all that, you know. And there's a real nice soft side to him, because I've got this hard man sort of geezer image that we would call it.
Yeah.
Rodney's great because he's just the opposite. He's too honest. He's too nice and too straight. And I think probably Uncle Albert, I think. Because then, again, there's so many layers to him as well.
Good choice, Bobby, isn't it? Good choice.
Can we hear a Nicholas Lick? Can we hear a Rodney?
Oh, bloody hell, Dale. It's well cosmic. It's not my favourite one, but, you know, because he's just got a generic London voice.
Yeah.
I mean, in that character. But again, you know, my favourite episodes are the Christmas special, the three at the end, the 96.
Yeah. 96 trilogy. Yeah,
tongue on my hands, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that.
Most people say go for sort of Jolly Boys outing or something like that, but yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's great, but I think... with the trilogy at that Christmas time, and everybody knew you're sort of coming to an end.
Yeah,
and I think the amount of you're so up and down. One minute you're laughing so much, and the next minute you're crying. You know,
I know what you mean, the baby
and all that sort of stuff, and like, oh my goodness, it's a real roller coaster of emotions. And because again, everybody knew it was going to be the last ones and all this sort of stuff, and I think the way they did it was so, I mean, like John Sullivan and the guys and that put it together, it was just beautiful, really. And you know, and the watch thing, you know, years ago I was doing the extra work in Bristol on a casualty, I think it was a casualty job, and I was an extra then back in the day, and there was a boxing thing going on, and I was just walking around, you know, like there's an extra and stuff like that. And didn't realise he was going to be in it, obviously. And then Paul Barber gets up as the referee and all this sort of stuff. Obviously, somebody gets hurt because obviously it's casualty, so most people get hurt on that, don't they? And he's dead, you know, one of them. And I was with this guy I knew, and he was walking around and just like, and I see, it's Denzel, isn't it? It's Denzel. And I was like, going, okay, yeah, yeah, no, no. Because Paul, you should shout out. All right, Denzel.
Amazing.
I think he'd freak out.
Did you go out?
What are you doing up there, you twonk? You know what I mean? What are you doing? So I didn't do it because I as an extra, you're the lowest of the low, and you're the lowest of the sort of like about.
Yeah, not if you want to be invited back, anyway.
Right, it's been really, really lovely talking to you, Paul. It's been so fascinating to hear your story and all the adventures that you've encountered during your days of your comedy impressionisms.
Yeah, thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you for coming on.
It's been a real pleasure, guys. Thank you very much. And, you know, all the listeners out there, you know, keep listening and enjoying it, you know, because I think there's so much to Fools and Horses and so many layers and stuff like that. And I think the British public, if not wider than that, you know, still keep it going, because I think, you know, it's just an institution, isn't it? You know, and
absolutely.
Massive.
You know, I really mean that, guys. And thank you very much for inviting me on. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, the pleasure's ours, Paul.
Yeah,
thanks so much, Paul.
Cheers, guys.
Have a nice evening.
Cheers. Bonjour.
Bon bouche.
Bonjour.
Take care. See you, Paul. Thanks, mate.
Take care. Kushti. Lovely jubby.
'Eyes down for a full house somewhere. Off and running.
Right, joining us for the quiz this week, we got John Lush. Good evening, John. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
No, pleasure. Thanks very much for getting in touch. I understand your nickname is Rodney. Is that correct?
At university, sadly, yes.
Why Rodney?
Well, when I got to the halls of residence in the house, there were two people called John, which, of course, is my real name. So everyone said, well, we're going to have to find a nickname. And I had the, I don't know if you remember it, the alarm clock, which basically, Only Fools alarm clock, which wakes you up by saying, Rodney, wake up, you plonker.
I had that same alarm clock. It was brilliant. The van,
It created a lot of attention. Everyone loved it. And I actually had to share a room. And my roommate at the time, who was a bit of an Only Fools fan, he took some getting used to, shall we put it that way. Wow. but yeah, so that's where the Rodney thing came in.
Oh, great.
Nice.
So you don't look anything like Rodney then?
I'm a little bit tall, a little bit lanky, but...
You wear an army jacket with a basin haircut at all?
Got your Dan Dare t-shirt on.
Sorry?
Got your Dan Dare t-shirt on.
not quite, but I've considered it.
So have you been doing your homework about this week's episode, which is The Russians Are Coming?
Yeah, I have. I love this episode, actually. I've forgotten how much I love it.
I'm so going to lose.
A lot of fun memories. I've watched it a couple of times in the last couple of days.
That's serious.
I'm fresh and ready to go.
Well, John, I've not seen that episode in quite a while, and I didn't even know I was going to be taking part in this quiz.
We haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, go easy on me, please. Go easy
on
me.
You're not bluffing.
He's bluffing. He's bluffing.
Good.
Right. Are we ready to go? Question one. How much did Dell pay for the pile of bricks?
Oh my God, I'm just going to be guessing. This isn't going to go very well for me. I'm going to say he paid 150 quid.
I hand it over. Do you want to take a guess, John?
It's 100 quid, I think.
100 nicker. That's right.
Well done, John. Right, question, well played.
Question one for John.
Okay.
How much profit did Dell say that he would make?
I think that's a bag of sand, a grand.
I think you might be right, but it said 200% was the actual figure he says.
Let's do the math now.
let me just take.
He's mentioning a grand, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'll say I'll give you the benefit of doubt on that one, and we'll fact check it afterwards.
Yeah, just give it to him. He knows what he's talking about.
Okay, Bailey, how many boxes of lead were there under the rubble?
14.
Pass it over to John.
30.
Correct. Look at that. He's done you.
I'm hanging my head in shame.
You should be. Right.
I know how you feel, Sam.
Question two. I want to keep on safe for Rodney. Question two for John.
Do you mean Paul?
Sorry, John. In your own time, my son.
Rodney. No, Irene.
In the second scene, when they get back to the flat, what was Rodney reading when Grandad and Dell were carrying in all the apparatus?
Dell thinks it's a naughty magazine, but in actual fact, I think it's instructions for the nuclear fallout.
Correct.
Oh, exactly.
Hang on, in my defence, I actually knew that one. That should have been my question.
Well,
cheated.
Okay, question three, Bailey. You can redeem yourself now. If you win all these...
Hardly. Go on then.
What's the score? Hang on.
It was 2-0.
All right.
What does Rodney say the four-minute warning will sound like?
Is it church bells ringing?
Yeah. Yeah, there's more.
Is that what it sounds like? Church bells ringing?
I'll give you that. It's church bells or tom-toms or ice cream vans.
Oh, ice cream vans.
To play the jingles, yeah. But yeah. I'll give you that because there's...
Pity.
Would you have got that, John?
Pity win.
Do you know what? I've forgotten the church bells, but I remember the ice cream vans.
There we go. Right, question three for John. Where does Grandad say to put the bunker up? Or where does Grandad want to put the bunker up?
Initially, it's down my neck of the woods where I live at New Forest.
Look at that. Ah. Straight in. Question four. At 2:15 remaining, where are the missiles, Bailey?
Clapham?
Not quite. Over the seas, approaching Middlesbrough.
Oh.
I should have offered that over. Sorry, John. Would you have got that?
to be fair, I think I'm going to say Luton, actually.
That's not bad.
Sod Luton?
Yeah. Question four for you, John. What was the name of the two police officers? Officers?
Right, so these are the only two characters outside the main three that appear, and it is Wayne and Eric.
Perfect, look at that.
Yes. I'll give you a clap, John.
Got it. It's 4 out of 4, isn't it?
Wayne!
Wayne!
Very good.
You have to promotion, Eric.
Yeah, Wayne is looking for his first
name. Yeah.
You've been on the funny fags. Was it? You've been on the funny fags again, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
Right, question five for Bailey.
Playing for pride.
Yeah, this is...
What
is
pride? It's all gone. John's taking it away.
We're going to have to take a decision on your entrance into this podcast, I think.
This will be my last time featuring on this podcast.
What cereal is on the shelf in the shelter?
Mighty Flakes?
No. Hand it over.
I almost feel, I guess, geeky knowing this. I'm pretty confident it's Rice Krispies.
Oh, he's done it.
Well done, yeah.
I can't believe it.
That's a 5 out of 5. Well done, John.
He's just got
babies. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So this is for a full house.
We're off in rack.
Right. What does Dale drive? Hang on. Oh, what does Dale drive down to sell to the Brixton rioters?
Oh God. Oh God.
The pressure's getting
it. It's stuck in the back of his brain.
I don't think it's right, but it's something like bricks or something.
Bailey, I'm going to hand it over.
Is that your final answer?
My mind's gone a blank. Yeah, I think it's not bricks, but yeah.
I'm going to give Bailey a chance.
I'm going to say something like some sort of crash helmet or some sort of defensive clothing.
Yeah, that was later on, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I'm going to give you the answer now. I'm not sure if it's given to John, though. It's paving slabs. It's pretty close, isn't it?
Yeah, give it to John.
Brick slabs.
Sausages.
Just different
ski masks.
Yeah, well done, John. Well done, mate. John.
Thanks very much, mate.
Well done, John. So, Tom, tell us more about the Only Fools and Horses musical you went to recently.
Yeah, I went to the matinee showing on Wednesday just gone. And it was better than I expected. I'm not into musicals personally, but it was quite irresistible. It's an official production. Jim Sullivan co-wrote it with Paul Whitehouse. So, you know, it did feel... And it was John Sullivan's work. Well, partially worked on it before he passed away. No, it's really good fun. And you don't have to like musicals to appreciate it. There's just loads of throwbacks. Nothing's really done in chronological order. Of course, like, you've got like Grandad in the timeline of Cassandra and Raquel, and it's all centered around Dale meeting Raquel, Dale taking a beating from the Driscoll brothers to help Rodney. There's other bits and pieces. The whole cast was superb, but like I think Ryan Hutton, who played Rodney, just hats off to him. Excellent. Just the mannerisms, the voice, the wigs, the glasses, brilliant. Everything, just really, really good.
So tell us a bit more about how is it structured? So have they basically taken elements from each one of the episodes and combined it to make a production, or have they put their own twist on things?
They haven't put their own twist on things per se. I think the way they deliver some certain quotes are slightly different pace and tone, but ultimately it's almost verbatim. The stage is really good. It's got, you know, you've got an Ag's Head, you've got the flat, market scene, a few other generic props. It's really, really... Mm-hmm.
Does the set change at all, or is it just a standard set and situations change around them?
Is there like a revolving set?
It's revolving. It does change. So it's like it rotates in a circle, and there's just different, three or four different sets. Nag's Head, like I said, the flat, market scene.
That's good. Yeah.
It's just good fun. And there's about 20 original songs, really upbeat. It's just, you know, we got like Margate playing and they sing the intro and outro a couple of times throughout.
What about the audience? Were they getting involved as well? The songs, like clapping and singing?
There are some elements of clapping. I think my favourite moment or the favourite song was Dale going to the dating agency and there's a song called A Bit of a Salt. It's written by Chaz Hodges, as in Chaz and Dave. And that was such a good, fun, upbeat song. And it was just class. Like, and it was completely different from... You know, that scene and dates. So I like they did have their own take on it, but everything in the Fools and Horses universe, everything was more or less used, almost every major moment.
So they stick that on your floppy disk or what?
Yeah, just
that line. So did they, in terms of obviously written by Charles Hodges?
Yeah. A lot of songs.
Yeah, but was it all very much like a Cockney kind of feel to it with the songs?
Yeah.
The whole lot, every single song? Were there any slower?
The vast majority were like that. So one of the opening sort of songs was a song about Cockneys.
Give us a spin on that line.
I can't even
She's a bit of a salt. She's a bit of a salt.
Please up, have a round.
It's
uh,
like It sounds like a Chaz and Dave type of song, doesn't it? She's a bit of a sort. Which sounds awesome.
And obviously, sadly, Chaz passed away last year, but it's a shame he didn't get to see it, obviously. And there was a live band there. We don't really see them, but they were performing. And Jim Sullivan, son of John, he's a musician that I'm led to believe he's a musician. I think he is anyway. And he obviously he was involved with the songwriting at least. Okay. So he must be, at least with the lyrics anyway. But yeah, I think all of the actors and actresses, great effort. Really good.
What about one-off characters, Tom? Was there any appearances from people like Lennox Gilbey?
There wasn't Lennox Gilbey.
Any references to Lennox Gilbey?
I don't recall anything about supermarket robberies.
Oh, right. Bailey doesn't want to go now.
No, I'm going to burn my ticket. Hang on, let me rip it up.
I think that's going to be the sequel.
Well, I'm not going then.
Yeah.
What about to Hull and Back? Any references? With the Diamonds? Or what about Slater? Is he in it?
That's good. No, you know
what? No, Slater. Who's the villain?
Driscoll's. The Driscoll's.
Ah.
So but I gave that speech like saying that there's every single story. Like, it's not obviously every single one, but... Even if they just reference it in conversation, they reference Batman and Robin, but they didn't show them dressed. I don't want to give too much away.
They mentioned Diamonds.
I think they did, yeah.
Okay.
I'm surprised they haven't mentioned Slater the Slag.
That's really interesting. I personally think Slater is more of a supervillain than the Driscolls.
Yeah.
But obviously the Driscolls...
He's the snake, isn't he?
Green grass, didn't it? Because
Snide. I'm going to get you, Snide.
But where's the wardens?
The finale to the show is really good fun, and yeah, I think if you can afford it and you get down to London,
show off.
It's a good day out. It's good.
I'm still not that bothered about it.
I wasn't overly bothered, but like, not to overhype it, but it surpassed expectations.
Okay,
it's
that's good
fun.
I think it looks really good from what I've seen, and if it comes to Bristol, I believe it's going to be touring.
Oh,
I'll
be good.
I'll get my ticket and I'll be at the front row.
I don't know if I should say this, but I know I've said it off this podcast, but the BBC, their entertainment reviewer, he gave it only 2 stars, which I'm really surprised. I thought the BBC might be quite biased towards it because it's part of their, you know, it's a...
They've taken in about £8 million in counting. And they've extended the shows, like, on into the year. And any show's going to
be... Maybe the BBC aren't getting the cut in this, and that's why they're getting 2 stars.
Maybe it was sour grapes all along.
I think the main criticism is some people want to know what's the point in it, but it's just fun, and it's, you know, it's full of quotes. We always quote to each other, don't we? Like, over WhatsApp, random stuff. It's like a live production of our WhatsApp chats, but put it together as a performance. And the music's fun. There's a couple of slow songs, which...
Nice one.
But, yeah, I gave the show a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. That is a big, big score for you as well.
Well, if you want scores out of 10, I'll go by the whole series. It's probably a 3 or 4. But if you're talking about just for series 1, I'll probably give it, maybe a 5. What about you, Billy?
I think it's quite an original episode. And I do quite enjoy watching it. So I think I'm probably going to give it a 7 just for its originality.
It's a good one.
Ed?
I'm going to give it a 4. I'm not going to lie. I'm not, you know, it doesn't do anything for me. And, you know, I wouldn't watch it unless I was watching it with you guys, to be honest.
No. I'm going to have to say, a 3 I'm giving it.
Ooh.
Which I know is really, really low. But even for this series, I think it's not a great episode for me. It feels almost like BBC propaganda kind of episode.
They had to tick the box.
Yeah, they have to do some sort of episode to warn people about the Soviet-Afghan war.
Well, this is the final episode of the series. However, we've got Christmas special, Christmas crackers, so that'll be our next episode airing soon.
Sounds strange to give a low rating for an Only Fools and Horses episode when this is the Only Fools and Horses podcast, but, you know, it just shows, you know, some of us giving it 7, a high rating, or some giving us 4. It just shows that everyone's got different tastes.
But also, you know, that the amount of episodes they did over sort of a 20-year period, there's always going to be some episodes that don't hit the mark.
Yes, yeah. Well, as for our next episode, we're not going to be leaving it as long this time. We're going to be next getting together on the 24th, aren't we, guys?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully we've got a very special guest going to be joining us.
Yeah.
We'll keep you in the loop about who it's going to be, but it should be a really, really interesting show.
Yeah.
Say what you like about Russians Are Coming. Grandad's war speech was the highlight for me.
Yeah,
I know it's not exactly common. Although he does mention about his brother pretending to be 14 and not 18 and all the rest of it. There's two parts of a speech, that part and when they're in bed and he's sort of talking about. It's the weaker one of the series. But roll on series two.
Yeah, well, what do we think about the next Christmas episode? Are we looking forward to that one?
I have any excuse to put a cracker and wear a Christmas hat.
Yeah, yeah. I'll bring
coming
the turkey.
To you this March.
Make sure we take the giblets out, James.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening anyway.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be back though, isn't it?
Yes. Yo!
Let's have some... if you haven't already, can you give us some feedback? And
that good or bad?
Good or bad.
But mainly good for me.
Constructive. That's all they mean to say.
Constructive, yeah.
Tell your pals about this show and...
download, rate, subscribe. Get in touch with us via Twitter.
I think I mentioned previously that if you guys are kind enough to leave us a review on Facebook or iTunes, our podcast actually gets pushed out further to a larger audience. And our main aim is to get this podcast out to as many Only Fools and Horses fans as possible. So, yeah, we'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to leave us a little review on iTunes. That would be cushy.
Absolutely.
Ed, are we on Instagram?
We are on Instagram, and I'm glad you brought this up. Our name is only_fools_horses. It's the biggest and best Only Fools and Horses collection of great pictures and videos on Instagram. So, yeah.
It's a bold statement.
Well, I back it up. Tell you.
Ed, what does mean?
Oh, it's N for November, you know?
Perfect. You can also find us on Facebook if you type in the Jolly Boys podcast, or you can find us on Twitter at the OFA_podcast.
And the OFAPodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. If you want to get in touch, or if you want to be a part of the quiz, or just come on for a chat, or tell us some crazy stories. We actually had a fan get in touch last week saying that their wife worked in the halfway house on the episode of Jolly Boys podcast, and she got to meet them and she got photos and several signatures. It sounds like a really, really amazing experience.
We should get her on the blower.
Well, I'm trying. Hopefully, we can get her onto the show and she can tell us her story about meeting the cast.
Cool. Anyway, TTFN.
Bon bouche for now.
Yo!
We got some half-price crack dice and miles of carpet tiles, TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LPs, ball games, gold chains, what's her names, and Ella Bruce, from Trevor Francis, tracksuits from a merchant shepherd's bush.